Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Nerd Stash Show. We are currently on episode number 73. I am Riley, and I am your host today. Taylor has abandoned us. No, I'm just kidding. I am joined by Michael Mosley. Michael, how are you today?
I am doing all right.
Good, good. Yeah, we got a good show. But before we get into any of that, let's start the show like we always do with what are we playing? Michael, what have you been playing lately?
I've actually been playing, well, started to play Plague's Tale on PS5. So I've been playing that for a little while. I've also been playing Yakuza Like a Dragon on Xbox via Game Pass.
I've heard both of those games are really, really good. I just haven't checked them out. Yeah, I don't know. How are you feeling about them?
Well, I like the Yakuza series. So, Like a Dragon is the biggest difference is the gameplay style, but it's still a fun, goofy story, and I'm enjoying it so far. I'm in the first 5 hours or so of the game, so it's very heavily focused on the story. So there's a lot of cutscenes, but I'm enjoying Like a Dragon. It's a good game so far, and I just started Plague, so unfortunately, I can't really give a synopsis on my feelings for that one.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds like, you know, something that sounds great. As for myself, I actually recently was able to get my hands on a PlayStation 5, so I've been playing Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that game is absolutely amazing. I have never actually played a Ratchet and Clank game before, this is my first one, and I think it's a really good one to start with. The haptics on the controller are something that I wasn't, like, I was aware of people saying how good the haptics on the PS5 controller are, as well as the adaptive triggers, but you don't really get a sense of how immersive they make the experience, especially with this game, until you get your hands on it. So. Yeah. Yeah,
ahead. No, I was gonna say, yeah. I love Ratchet and Clank. Oh my goodness, I love that series since the PlayStation 2 days. I'm always looking forward to a new Ratchet and Clank. So Rift Apart is definitely a great game for anyone who hasn't played it. It's a great game to get into since they started rebooting the series. But yeah, the haptic feedback that you get for the triggers and controller, it is hard to explain until you experience it. It's one of those things where feeling is believing, where you have to have the control in your hands in order to actually understand.
Yeah, it's the haptic feedback is just amazing. And the gameplay itself is awesome, too. I was not able to play, or I never played the PS4 like reboot of Ratchet and Clank, but I heard that game was amazing as well. Yeah, like you're saying, since they rebooted the series, they've kind of gotten back on track, because I know for a while there, they were kind of, like, not great. I think during the PS3 generation, correct me if I'm wrong there, but...
When it came to the PS3, the only thing that I didn't like... Well, they tried doing a few spin-off, like, smaller games, like, what was it called? Ratchet and Clank, it was a pirate game.
Sure.
Something about booty. It was fun. Yeah, it was fun, but it didn't feel like an epic Ratchet and Clank adventure. It felt like a small, kind of like when you go from a movie to a TV series, where they make a TV series adaptation out of a good movie. That's kind of like what the Ratchet and Clank, like, shorter games felt like when they weren't the main series, when they weren't focused on the main story. So those happened in the PS3 era. And then they tried to reboot it with the game just simply called Ratchet and Clank, which they did in part with the movie that came out. I didn't see the movie.
That's right.
Yeah, I didn't see the movie because it looked awful, despite the point that Ratchet and Clank pretty much writes itself. But yeah, the movie didn't do well, and the reboot, it kind of followed the same beats as the first game, the very first Ratchet and Clank game, but it changed up a few things. And for some reason, it didn't feel as Ratchet and Clank as it should. And it's kind of weird to say it, but yeah, I played Ratchet and Clank because I love the series. And it, for some reason, it just did not feel right. But this one, with Rift Apart, it is magnificent. And it really did feel like a return to form.
Yeah, it's, I'm really enjoying it. And then apart from that, I've also been playing something on my Switch called Rogue Heroes Ruins of Tassos. This is kind of like a weird little indie game that's basically, it's basically like a carbon copy of A Link to the Past. Like if you play the game, there are, so the main conceit of the game is there are four main dungeons. Each one is randomly generated. There are a number of different levels to the each dungeon. And the dungeons, even though they're randomly generated, they have a lot of stuff that is just like ripped right out of A Link to the Past. And you can like play four player co-op in each dungeon. So a friend of mine actually recommended the game to me because he was playing it and wanted somebody to play with. So I've really been enjoying that as well. And if you like especially like older 2D Zelda style video games, then this is, you're gonna love this. So all right, let's get into our stories of the week. Sony today had a state of play where the main thing that they showed off was Deathloop, but they also showed off a bunch of other games. So before we talk about anything Deathloop related, let me ask you, Michael, was there anything else in this state of play that looked interesting to you?
I'm going to be honest with you. Deathloop was the only thing I really paid attention to.
Sure.
Because I like Arkane Studios. I think they make some pretty interesting stuff. So yeah, Deathloop was the game I was looking forward to. Honestly, this was one of those state of plays to where it was just a thing that existed. They announced a new Demon Slayer game. I don't even know if it's new. All these anime fighting games are all the same.
Yeah,
it's like saying the new Call of Duty. It's Call of Duty. It's you know what you're getting. But What was it? Sifu.
Yes.
Sifu is still one that I'm interested in checking out. I don't know when in the world that thing's supposed to be coming out. Was there an announcement for that?
It says here that it's been delayed to early 2022.
Okay, see, that's why. All right. Yeah, so yeah. Sifu is still a game I'm looking forward to. But yeah, normally the state of play definitely caught my attention and kept it.
Absolutely. So for me, there were a couple of things that looked interesting apart from Deathloop. Let me see if I can say this right. Arcadageddon. There we go. This is a PlayStation 5 game. It starts early access today. It looks like kind of like a four-player co-op shooter kind of thing. The main thing with this game that really caught my attention, was actually somewhat interesting to me, was that I couldn't help but noticing that the art style is very much Knockout City. It's kind of using that same art style about it. And there were a couple other things in here that were interesting to me too. But yeah, the main thing with this state of play was Deathloop. So let me ask you, what did you think of this, what they showed?
Honestly, there's not much to it. Like, those 9 minutes is what they've been showing us since the game was announced, what, 2-3 years ago?
Sure.
They showed the same powers. In fact, they showed less powers this time around. They showed the wolf again. They've been showing that boss. And they did bring up the whole, here's, when you hear this, this chime, this song, that means that this woman who's hunting you is now in the level, whether it's AI controlled or player controlled. So I was kind of hoping they're going to go deeper into that and how it works. Like, is it drop in, drop out? Players just drop in whenever? Is there scripted moments when the AI jumps in? Like, how does that actually work? But no, they don't talk anything about that. They just say, oh yeah, a player can drop in or she's going to be AI controlled. And that was it. That was the end of it. It's like, well, that's what your 9 minutes have been focused on. We've seen the gameplay. You've shown us this whole thing before. We've seen the island. We've seen the eight. We've seen the wolf multiple times. But you didn't show us anything actually new.
Yeah, it's interesting for me as somebody that hasn't paid too much attention to a lot of the marketing around Deathloop. Like, all I knew about it kind of prior to this state of play was that it was just, you know, sort of like asynchronous multiplayer, like you were saying, where one player controls kind of the female character hunting down, I believe his name is Cole. And so, yeah, that can be either AI controlled, but I think the real conceit of the game is that, you know, it's another another player playing this other character hunting you down while you're trying to complete your mission. I will say that, like, I was kind of surprised, again, as somebody that hasn't looked, like, hasn't paid too much attention to a lot of the marketing around Deathloop, I was surprised how much of Dishonored's DNA is in there. I mean, I would not be surprised at all if we found out, you know, in a couple of years that Deathloop started out as another Dishonored game, because it is, I mean, when the player was using, I don't know what they're going to call it within Deathloop, when they were using the blink ability, you know, the teleport ability, I was like kind of surprised by that. But you're right. The most interesting thing about this game is what you were saying, that, you know, there's this other character hunting your character, but they haven't explained yet, like, how that's going to work. Does this other player, like, does this other character, like, what abilities does she have? What is your kind of incentive for playing her rather than going through the game as Cole? Like, do you get, like, extra abilities in your home game or something? Like, it's not very clear. So I would definitely like to see more of that. I'm excited for Deathloop. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm definitely going to check it out when it comes out.
Yeah, I've been waiting on Deathloop for a while. I know it is coming out for Xbox next year, next September. Next September, after their year exclusivity with PlayStation is done. But hey, if you got Game Pass, you're most likely going to get it on Game Pass. But I'm definitely looking forward to my PS5 because of adaptive triggers.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Deathloop. I've been looking forward since they announced it. And all these delays, I think it's been delayed twice now. All the delays have been making me kind of sad because we should have had the game on our hands by now. But if it's going to be less buggy than what Dishonored was, then I'm down for it.
Yeah, I'm always in favor of developers, you know, taking whatever extra time they need to kind of polish up and finish up what they got. Anything else to say on this one, Michael?
Just like with Bethesda and Arcane. Nope, I got nothing new to say about this.
All right, then let's move on. So, Nintendo announces a new Switch model. Earlier this week, Nintendo officially revealed a new Switch model. However, it's not really what people were expecting. According to Nintendo's website, the new model will feature a larger 7-inch OLED screen, a wider adjustable kickstand for tabletop play, an upgrade of 64 gigabytes from 32 gigabytes of internal storage, enhanced audio, and a dock that features a wired LAN port, which will allow for faster download speeds. The system will go on sale October 8th and will retail for $349.99. Before we get into that, I want to touch on a report written by Kyle Orland over at Ars Technica. Orland writes, "The most surprising thing about the Switch's newly announced OLED model might just be what it's missing. Namely, it's missing a new chipset that bumps up the processing power above what's available on existing Switch hardware." Orland goes on to write, "The lack of improved internals is surprising mainly because a number of reports that promise the next Switch would support a bump to 4K graphics when paired with TVs, as Bloomberg phrased it as recently as March. Bloomberg reporters tend to be reliable when it comes to this kind of insider Nintendo reporting, including an early 2019 report that predicted a lower-priced Nintendo Switch Lite months ahead of its announcement. Bloomberg also got the other details right about the OLED model, including the 7-inch OLED screen that maintains the original Switch's 720p resolution, and the general timing of when the manufacturing would begin." So to quickly recap of all of this, here's a quick TLDR, excuse me. Nintendo revealed a new Switch model called the Nintendo Switch OLED model. It features a bigger OLED screen, a wired LAN port, enhanced audio, 64 gigabytes of internal storage, and goes on sale starting October 8th for $349.99. Many people are frustrated with this because of previous reports that described a more promising upgrade. Instead, on paper, it appears the OLED model is more of a minimal upgrade from the base Switch. Furthermore, many are also confused on who this console is for. So let me ask you this, Michael. What are your thoughts on the new OLED Switch model?
Useless. Pointless. unless you don't have a Switch for some reason. This is just Nintendo doing the very bare minimum. Don't get me wrong, an OLED screen is great, and they're 0.8 inches of new screen from 6.2 to 7 inches.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool, awesome. But OLEDs are gorgeous. Oh my goodness. I can only imagine how crisp those jaggy edge Switch games are going to look on such a beautiful screen. Because there's no resolution improvement. There's no frame rate improvements. So you're just going to get janky 720, not even 900p, but 720p. Well, 720p is still good, and it's still playable. It's not like we're talking about the Xbox One, the base Xbox One, the original launch Xbox One here. So, you know, there are plenty of games that struggles at 60 frames. So you're going to be on this gorgeous looking screen that's doing 720 and not even 1440, which would have been a lot better. Like, I can understand if they had support for 1440. That'd be kind of cool. But we do know that it's going to be the same joysticks. We know that it's going to be the same internal workout as the original launch, the original base Switch. Not like the Switch Lite, but the original Switch. They're still using Tegra X1 chip? I think they call it X1. But yeah, they're still using Tegra, I believe is what it's called. There's no new chip. There's no bump to the chip. The only real difference we're getting, the biggest difference we're getting is a better kickstand, a better stand. Now they use the wide stand. Thank goodness, because that little stick thing that they had on there, my nieces and nephew broke that off of my Switch not too long after I got the darn thing. So we get a better stand. Apparently better audio on the Switch, since we don't actually get to hear it. We don't know what it's like, but, you know, we get better audio on there, and you get that gorgeous OLED screen, which, while I do appreciate it, I still feel is a waste on the Switch since it only does 720.
Yeah, I completely agree. I definitely think I don't understand why Nintendo is even doing this. I guess it makes sense from the perspective of, like, instead of thinking of this as a brand new Switch model, which technically it is, it's more of just like a slight upgrade, like you were saying. But as somebody who plays their Switch almost completely docked, at this point, there's no, like, point in me buying this at all. So, you know, I guess that goes on to the next question. Do you agree with people who are saying that it's not worth the asking price?
It's absolutely not worth the asking price. You can, for about $100 more, you can get a 4K TV, like an actual 4K TV, for the asking price of an OLED Switch that is 720. For $350, you can get a really small, I think 20, I'm gonna say 20 to 28 inches of a 4K TV now. So it really makes no sense for this asking price. The only people that I see getting this and actually seeing that it's worth the price are people who do not have a Switch and getting one. If you already have one, it's not worth $350. You can get a Xbox Series S for $300 for a few more. You can get, I don't know, you can go out and buy a PS Vita. I don't know. You're probably getting a better deal out of that anyway. But yeah, it's not worth the asking price. It's not worth $350. I don't understand why Nintendo thinks that this would be the thing that keeps the Switch relevant, which we already know they're working on the next generation of whatever console they have coming along. But simply saying, hey, we have a new screen and we now have a landline that you can put into the back of the Switch anyway, and a new vent inside the dock, it's not enough to say it's worth more than that it's worth $350 just for the screen. That's basically what you're paying for. You're basically paying for the screen.
Yeah, I totally agree. I definitely don't think it's worth the asking price either. Let me ask you this as well. So according to Bloomberg's report earlier in March, they were saying that what they were hearing was that the Switch would have native, where it would have 4K when docked and paired with a TV. It would provide 4K output, at least when it was docked. Again, like we said earlier, Bloomberg is, you know, pretty reliable when it comes to this sort of stuff. So that leads a lot of people questioning whether that was Nintendo's original plan and whether the pandemic, you know, maybe disrupted those plans. And if they did, why, like, if the pandemic did mess with their plans to come out with a 4K Switch, why do you think that they, you know, instead decided to do a slightly, like, a less impressive upgrade and not just wait for the Switch Pro?
Okay, for Nintendo, you know, they know that they can get away with these kind of things. You know, they do it all the time with their mid-gen stuff. When the Game Boy came, when the Game Boy came out, the Game Boy Color, and then the Game Boy Advance, and now with Advance SP, they've always done this. And when they came out with the Switch Lite, you know, I don't think they got the bump in sales that they wanted. Because that usually works for Nintendo. You know, they come out with something that's slightly better than the original version they've had. They did it with the Wii, with the Wii Mini, which was their late in the game. It doesn't matter. We're just going to throw that as an experiment, digital only box kind of deal, which didn't work out. And I don't think they really care about that. They didn't get a chance to do it with the Wii U. They did it with the 3DS, and they did it with the 3DSi or something like that, and XL. And until they came out with something like the new 3DS, Nintendo's always experimenting with different ways of doing things as cheaply as they can. Let's face it, let's call Nintendo what they are. They want to do the bare minimum. They do everything on a budget compared to Microsoft and Sony. You know, they do Absolutely. Things on a budget. They don't really have that Microsoft/Sony money. So I think with this version, with the new Switch, they know people have complained about the screen, and they're looking in. Nintendo have said before that they wanted a better screen. You know, they looked at LCD, but they also looked at OLED, I believe, when they first started dealing with the Switch. In fact, I think they were even looking at it back in the Wii U days. But the screen wasn't as responsive, the touch screen wasn't as responsive as they like, so it never happened. So OLED has always been something Nintendo wanted to do, and I think this is kind of Nintendo's way of seeing if they can do it and if it's profitable. And I think maybe that's why they're doing it with this Switch, because Switch is already a hit for them. So this is going to be more like, oh yeah, we have a better screen, but this OLED screen didn't cost us as much as it would have a few years ago when the Switch first came out. And now that it's cheaper, we can do it now. And I think this is going to be an experiment for them for the next Nintendo product that may be a Switch 2 or however they're going to call it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with all of that. Anything else to say on this one?
If you do not have a Switch, this is a good time to get it. Switch has a bunch of great games. Breath of the Wild 2 is going to be coming out soon. We're getting a new Metroid. There's no real reason for you not to have a Switch. If you've been waiting, there's no reason for you not to get this Switch. This is the Switch that you're going to want to get. You're going to get all the bells and whistles that the old Switch has with a better screen. But with that said, I really do hope Nintendo does better with their Joy-Cons, because I know people have had a lot of problems with that. And yeah, just make a better Joy-Con. That's one big improvement I wish they did make.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. All right, let's move on to our next story. So Ubisoft reveals Assassin's Creed Infinity. So, as reported by Bloomberg, Ubisoft has set its sights on the next installment in the Assassin's Creed franchise. According to Bloomberg, this project, called Assassin's Creed Infinity, is set to be an evolving live service title taking place across several settings with more locations to release post-launch. Ubisoft Montreal and Ubisoft Quebec are expected to collaborate on Assassin's Creed Infinity as joint developers, with Quebec taking the lead on the project. Both studios have prior experience with the franchise, by the way. However, it's said that the two studios have engaged in occasional bitter rivalry and that this shift may cause some headaches. Unfortunately, that's not all. According to Bloomberg, the game's development has been affected by Ubisoft's sexual misconduct allegations from 2020 and the internal reorganization that transpired after the allegations. Bloomberg says, quote, "Some managers accused of abusive behavior remain in senior positions after the reorganization. Some people familiar with the matter said. That has prompted a fresh round of complaints on Ubisoft's internal message board from employees who are dissatisfied with the company's response to the allegations. According to people who read the messages, which were written in French, Bloomberg reviewed English translations. A Ubisoft spokesperson declined to talk about individual cases, but told Bloomberg, quote, "Any employee that had allegations and remain at Ubisoft has had their case rigorously reviewed by a third party and were either exonerated or underwent appropriate disciplinary actions," she said. "Employees who have been under investigation would not remain at Ubisoft if the results of the investigations warranted termination." Surprisingly, Ubisoft would later confirm the existence of Assassin's Creed Infinity via a blog post. Ubisoft has also confirmed that Assassin's Creed Infinity is a collaborative project between Ubisoft Montreal and Ubisoft Quebec. Here's an excerpt from that blog post. Quote, "Rather than continuing to pass the baton from game to game, we profoundly believe this is an opportunity for one of Ubisoft's most beloved franchises to evolve in a more integrated and collaborative manner that's less centered on studios and more focused on talent and leadership, no matter where they are within Ubisoft. Most importantly, Assassin's Creed has always been developed by multicultural teams with various backgrounds and perspectives that have influenced the depiction of its characters, locations, and cultures. While we know there's always room for improvement, we believe the new structure allows us to ensure that diversity and representation within our teams continues to grow and match that of our players," unquote. And to go back to the Bloomberg report one last time, here's a tweet from notable insider Jason Schreier, who wrote the report, by the way. Schreier clarified some of the takes being thrown around regarding Infinity. Quote, "Seeing a lot of really bad takes out there, so I just want to reiterate, Assassin's Creed Infinity being a live service platform doesn't mean it's Destiny or Anthem. There will still likely be narrative Assassin's Creed stuff. It'll just be a part of Infinity," unquote. Okay, so this is a wild news story and has several layers to it. Let's lead off with the live service concept of Assassin's Creed Infinity. To be fair, Ubisoft never outright admitted that Infinity was a live service game, but based on Bloomberg's report, let's work under that assumption for now. What are your thoughts, Michael, on Assassin's Creed turning into a live service title?
It was only a matter of time. We already knew that Ubisoft was going down this road. More and more of their franchises returned to games as a service. It's not surprising to me. I really don't care for Assassin's Creed series anymore. That franchise has died down for me since Black Flag. I think Black Flag was the last one I actually enjoyed. And Origins was terrible to me. I hated Origins, even though everybody loved it. They're moving more towards grinding RPG, clutter the world with 6 billion things to do to keep players engaged so we can sprinkle in microtransaction on everything kind of gameplay. And I'm tired of it, and seeing how they're trying to make it that kind of mobile-esque, always online, keep the players engaged and make them buy after they purchase the game kind of deal is not surprising to me. And I think Assassin's Creed, unfortunately, is a franchise they can do that with its ability to expand throughout history, the point they can do past, present, future. So yeah, it makes sense to me that Ubisoft is going down this road, and it's very unfortunate, and it's just going to kill off the series for players who decided to stick around with it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. So I haven't played, like you, I haven't played Assassin's Creed since, I think, Unity, which was, you know, almost universally panned. But I really enjoyed that game. But I think the real, like with you, the best one I played before that was Black Flag. And I haven't played any of the new ones either. But yeah, I'm not surprised at all. Like, just like what you said, Ubisoft is, you know, trying to go down that path of live service titles and, you know, kind of milking their franchises for what they're worth. I am sort of interested in it from a technical perspective. It almost seemed like Assassin's Creed Infinity would be sort of a high level, the way I'm, that they were kind of vague about it in their blog post, but what it seemed to be to me was sort of like a high level integration between all of the next Assassin's Creed games coming out. Because they did say that there were still going to be different worlds within Infinity. So that makes me think that maybe, you know, we'll still get, you know, an Assassin's Creed game every, you know, year or two, like they've been coming out recently, but they will all be tied into this Infinity service. So with all the behind the scenes problems mentioned in the Bloomberg report, the 2020 misconduct allegations, the rivalry between Ubisoft Montreal and Ubisoft Quebec, etc., do you think this game is already facing an uphill battle?
You know, that's actually a very good question. How do you feel about it? Because, you know, to be honest, I'm unsure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, okay, so let's take this down one by one. So the 2020 sexual misconduct allegations, as we said, the problem there is there are a lot of managers still in managerial positions who had allegations lobbed towards them. And a lot of people within Ubisoft are kind of bitter about that, right? That these people, like some people, it seems to be only the most egregious offenders were, you know, fired out of the company. But some of the other ones haven't been and still remain in pretty high, you know, pretty high positions within the company. So I think that first and foremost hinders productivity and morale within the teams, right? The same thing with Ubisoft Montreal and Ubisoft Quebec. I don't know all of the ins and outs of that rivalry. I assume that it has to do with each team just wants to be the best-selling Assassin's Creed team. I believe it was Ubisoft Montreal. I might have this backwards, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was Montreal that developed Odyssey and Quebec that developed Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So it seems to me that this rivalry is nothing more than just like, we want to be the best Assassin's Creed, you know, team out there. So I think them working together, I think they could probably set that aside to create, you know, something like something interesting within the Assassin's Creed world. So yeah, I think they're going to face some problems with this game, but that might be offset as well by you know, this merger of the two teams working on this one project. I will say also that it's, you know, people who work inside of these companies, I think, are no longer like excited to be working on gigantic AAA games, and this seems like huge. So I think even from a morale perspective there, people are kind of burned out working on these titles like year after year or year after every 2 years or so. So do I think it's doomed from the start? No. Do I think it's going to be a challenge for them to get this off the ground? Absolutely. I'm expecting a lot of whatever it ends up being, I'm expecting a lot of day one bugs, a lot of problems that they will fix in the years after release.
not with years.
I think so. So based on the response from this announcement so far, do you think people are tired of live service games? Or do you think the genre just needs a great title to change public perception?
I mean, people are tired of it, but people also love it if done right. And I think that's what everybody's waiting for. Everybody's waiting for a game to do it right. Because a lot of gamers, they're adults now. I hate to say it. Like, I know gaming has been here since, 1900s? Well, duh. But, 1950, 60. But gaming has been around for a long time. But, it's gone from a niche market to just being mainstream to the point to where a lot of those kids back in the 80s and 90s that helped make games big, the 2000s, they're adults. They have jobs. They have lives. So live services does not work out for a huge part of the gaming community. And even when it comes to kids, they play other things. Like, sure, they play Fortnite and whatnot, but they still go out. They go outside. They do things. They play. They hang out with friends. They're going to grow out of these things, and the new kids are going to come by. And then these companies, they want that generational deal going on. They want the dad and the mom to teach the kids and the kids into the gaming and blah, 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 blah. And live services can do that for them as you're stuck in one economy. You're in their ecosystem. But everybody is getting tired of people half-assing live services. You do it and then you drop it. Again, I hate to say this, but Ubisoft has done a great job with their live services. They say a game is going to be a live service. They support it. You have to, if you're going to make a live service game, you have to support it. And most companies, they want to do live service, but they don't want to maintain it. They want to move on to the next thing. Ubisoft, they do a good job with that. I know it sucks, but it's true. Even for games like For Honor, which honestly does not have that big of a player base. It's still getting updates, they're still maintaining that game. Let's see. We were talking about on one of the other podcast episodes, Hyperscape lost players by the hundreds within weeks of the game being released, to the point to where it's not even that many people watching it on Twitch. And the whole Twitch thing was a huge part of the game. So when you lose one big chunk of your mechanics, the Twitch part, the game is pretty much dead. But Ubisoft still support it. They still supporting that game. And most companies, and I'm definitely looking at Activision, does not support their live service game. So when it comes to it, I think people are tired of it, but they're tired of it because nobody's doing a good job of maintaining it. And I do think it does have a place in the gaming community, and it can be a good thing if companies actually dedicate themselves to it, like they want their players to dedicate to it.
I couldn't agree more. Anything else to say on this, Michael?
No Unity this time, please. If you're gonna do a live service, kind of have it to where like we can go through each of the old Assassin's Creed game, like we kind of visit the settings of Assassin's Creed 1 or Assassin's Creed 2. Something like that. That'd be kind of cool. That will attract me back into there. I'm not saying it has to be like a remaster of all the games put into one, but like have fun to where I can go back to those time periods that I actually enjoy and play in those levels. Wishful thinking on my end. Wishful thinking.
That would be really, really cool. So that's it for today's show. So let's move on to what are we working on and where can people find you? Michael, what are you working on and where can people find you?
I am actually working on a little expose, a little thing to where I speak with Call of Duty hackers, because there's been a lot of those lately. Well, it's been a while and it's been a thing, but they're getting really out of hand. Especially after the whole Apex Legends hack that happened not too long ago. I'm actually looking to a story in a way. I want to speak with a few hackers and just find out what's the idea? Why are you doing this? Is it fun to you? Do you like trolling people? Do you make video contents off of this? What's the deal? So that's my thing. I'm currently working on not even a tell all, but let hackers speak kind of story. So that's what I'm working on.
That sounds really fascinating and something that I would really enjoy reading. As for myself, I'm not working on much. I'm working on this show. You can find me in the Discord over at the Nerd Stash. And yeah, that's kind of it for me. So yeah, that's it for this episode. You can follow us on Twitter at the Nerd Stash Show. If you would consider subscribing and leaving us a review on whatever platform you find us on. And as Taylor says, it would be really, really nice if it was a positive review. Doesn't have to be, but it would be really, really nice. this week, also, you can check out Nerds Talk Movies. A new episode is arriving Monday night, which will most likely be a spoiler talk for Black Widow, which is a movie that I am somewhat excited for. Finally, you can check us out at thenerdstash.com. And thank you to Michael and to anyone listening. And I will say thank you to Taylor for helping me write the show notes. See you next week.